welcome to the first podcast of 2021. It's been a while. I took a little bit of a break over Christmas and January. Like all of us, we're kind of getting settled back into life. I don't know why 2021 feels like a big stepping stone for everyone out there, but definitely did for me. Even though I know nothing really has changed since 2020, and I think that's becoming even more apparent. But obviously, Trump being out does kind of take the air out of the balloon a little bit, so that's actually been quite nice for all of us out here. But you know, it is a new year. It's time to kind of recalibrate. It's time to like look at career goals, personal goals, or not. You know, I still feel like last year people were really conscious about making sure that people didn't feel the need to continue to be productive if they didn't feel they were up to it, and I still think that should be the case. But if you are feeling inspired, this is definitely the time to kind of set your goals and look forward to the future. And I'm no different. I feel like last year I kind of went for ebbs and flows. As soon as the pandemic hit, I kind of went for a lazy period in March, and then in April I like went super productive. May I was super productive again. Then June kind of hit and I just got very lazy, and July I got very lazy, and it didn't kind of crack until October, and then I kind of hit my stride again. As far as my career goes and those kind of goals, I want to keep improving the podcast. I want to grow the audience, and thank you for listening. If you are new to this, please subscribe and help me out. If you're on the old Apple, please comment as well and leave a 5-star review. That really helps. And if you are on any other platform and want to help me out, please share it with a colleague that you think would find this interesting. You know, it's slowly been growing, and it's I'm looking at ways to improve it. I'm gonna start bringing in a few different formats. I kind of looked at last year at the end. I had a podcast about talking about growth marketing and what that actually is. I'm gonna continue that format. I'm gonna look at different areas of marketing and different roles within marketing to kind of really take a bit more of a deep dive, because I feel like we hear the terms a lot and we tend to make a lot of assumptions of what those roles are. So it was really, for me, for growth marketing, I was partially right, but I wasn't completely right. And so it was really good to hear from someone who actually does that role and what it actually entails. For my own knowledge, let's say if I end up, hopefully, you know, in a position of power and I'm hiring these positions, I want to know what they exactly are. Or if you are interested in going in that direction. So with those podcasts, I'm definitely putting a focus on like what the day-to-day is, what's exciting about it, and if you're wanting to go in that direction, what to study. So look out for more of those. I'm also looking to do more of a monthly news segment kind of podcast episode as well, and looking at having a consistent co-host for that. So, you know, you'll hear a bit more of my opinions about what I think, and you kind of heard that with the Marketing Awards, which if you didn't listen to, that's probably been probably my best episodes. So go back and listen to them. As for today's episode, I actually recorded this back in December. I thought it was a really important episode, and still is an important episode, about accessibility in the digital space. It became very important if you're a digital marketer last year or touch websites at all, especially if you live in Toronto or Ontario, because we had the Accessibility Act kick in on January 1st. So kind of this episode kind of leads into that, but essentially your website now needs to be accessible for everyone. And there's a lot of features that, you know, you'd really kind of need to deep dive into, and it's not easy. It's not fun work, I will say that much. You know, you have to deal with code and regulation, not fun. And it's a bit tough to know who that falls on. In our company, it was a little bit of Because being that marketing owns the website, we obviously had to deal with it, but it's also operations talent issue as well. Being a law firm, that we're very aware of it and we're very on top of it, so we were able to get our website up to code. It's also a confusing one, being it is regulation, but the rules are kind of murky, and how much teeth it has, we also don't know. So we'll see. And so this is a great episode. It was with Jackson Khan, who works at Fable, and I don't even know how I think I found him. I think I've, like many times with my episode guests, I follow them on LinkedIn, and then they post something of interest, and I email them to say, hey, that's interesting, you want to do an episode about it? So he works at a company that actually hires people with disabilities to kind of go on your website and test it out for real, rather than just rely on technology to tell you that it's not accessible. It actually has people test to see how user-friendly it is for people with disabilities. And it's important because even beyond the fact that people with, like, you might just think of that being an ethical thing to do, or a legal thing to do. It's not. This is a big audience, and it's a growing audience. Like, we have an aging population, and eyesight issues are becoming more prevalent, as well as sight issues. So sight and sound, obviously. So when you think of accessibility, I think it's really important to think of it as accessibility for everyone. And and I bring up the market now because, you know, I'm a heartless marketer, but you've got stakeholders to convince. And if you have these kind of ideas behind you of, like, you know, we might be losing 10% of our audience or potential customers, that's going to be good money for us. Like, you know, I know you need these in your back pocket to be able to convince some of those stakeholders to invest in these areas. It's also important to know, like, this is probably going to be something that you'll be asked in interviews if you're going for a job, especially if you're in the digital marketing space. So it's good to just have a heads up on it and what knowledge it does take, and what tools might be available out to you as well. So really great episode. I hope you enjoy it. Again, this was recorded in the December, and I don't think we say anything too timely, but I think we do make reference to January 1st, or that's why it's kind of in the future tense and not in the past tense. But I hope you really enjoy it. Again, if you can subscribe and like and share and comment and do all the fun stuff that you know the algorithm loves, and will help me out, because you're all great marketers out there as well. Today on the podcast, we're talking about website accessibility with Jackson Khan from Fable, who leads the growth at the platform. Prior to Fable, he founded a global communications consulting firm focused on AI education and fintech companies. Before that, he worked at Nudge.ai and, how do you pronounce this, Influitive?
You got it. It's like Influence plus Intuitive, Influitive.
Oh, I'm surprised I got that one right, actually. he's also a host of a podcast called Ask AI. Welcome to the podcast, Jackson.
Thanks very much, Michael. Excited to be here.
So I wanted to bring you on, talk about a little bit about accessibility, but, like, first off, what is Fable and kind of what's your role at the company?
Super happy to share that. So Fable's an accessibility testing platform powered by people with disabilities. And really, actually, companies use our platform to support all stages of accessibility, whether that's testing and validating their products to make sure they're accessible and usable for people with disabilities, as well as to conduct user research for future products and everything in sort of their product development pipeline. And, you know, ultimately, like, we are helping organizations move from just even just thinking about, you know, complying with certain accessibility guidelines to actually building really exceptional accessible user experiences. We work with product organizations, UX and design teams, development teams, and even more, you know, all to improve sort of accessibility. And on my end, I'm the senior growth manager. I lead our growth efforts right now. That's sales development, lead generation, that's marketing and partnerships. And yeah, I actually just joined recently a few months ago, and I really love the job because, you know, we're working with great companies, we're working with people with disabilities, and we're actually helping make the web more accessible for up to a billion people.
And when we're talking about accessibility, particularly in the digital space, what are we really referring to?
So a lot of times when you hear accessibility, you probably think of guidelines. Probably the most well-known ones are the WCAG guidelines. And that's things like, you know, ensuring that maybe there's enough color contrast or let's say alternative text on an image. So that's text that shows up if someone's not actually able to view images, and that text would get read aloud by a screen reader. And if you don't have some of those basic things in place, let's say, you know, someone's blind or they have low vision, your website or app may not be accessible to them. Someone literally with disabilities or who uses assistive technology could not access it. And that's a good baseline to keep in mind for accessibility. At Fable, you know, we work on that. We also go a lot farther than it. We actually consider the usability of a website for people with disabilities and who use assistive tech. So asking, you know, questions like, is this user experience good? Is someone with disabilities effectively able to use the website without the help of another person? For example, someone who's able-bodied. We actually even created a quick free tool to assess that usability factor. It's known as the Accessible Usability Scale.
Let's quickly plug that tool. Where can we get that?
So that's at our website, makeitfable.com/AUS, Oz, we call it the Oz.
And kind of what are some of the biggest issues that you kind of see when it comes to an inaccessible website?
So some of the things I just mentioned, it could be like, for example, low contrast on colors, missing alt text on images. There could be missing link text, so you don't know where a link is going, or maybe it's too ambiguous. There could be too many navigation links, so it's, you know, you don't really know where you're going. There's too many ways to get around, and maybe it takes you in loops. Could be empty form labels, so you don't actually know where to enter information or how to do so. And then beyond some of the, you know, the quick button accessibility issues, there's big usability issues. There could be a lack of thought about focus. So as a user, for example, let's take for example, a blind user, where is the focus of my keyboard or my mouse, especially after an action is taken? So imagine, you know, Sam on our team, for example, he was talking to me about this earlier. As a screen reader user, so someone who actually uses screen reading technology to narrate items and elements on the screen, a website may have no feedback given when a button is pressed. Because something else is happened somewhere else on the page. Or let's say someone is using screen magnification technology. So it's zooming in on a part of the page to make it more visible. Imagine they're, you know, trying to buy something on Amazon or let's say an e-commerce store, and they press the add to cart button, but they get no feedback that product that they want to buy has been added to the cart. Zero has changed and the focus wasn't moved there. And maybe they've magnified their page to the point where they can actually no longer see the part that they initially wanted to interact with. So there's a lot of issues, and that can extend from everything, you know, to this add the cart to bigger errors. You know, ultimately people should keep in mind when they got on a website, they've got an app. If anytime something happens, the user needs feedback on what happened, and that can be done by moving focus to the place or the element that's changed, by giving an alert, for example. But this is a thing that's, you know, it's very frequently nobody really talks about it during design is kind of this accessibility of focus. And so, yeah, I mean, there's some really big basic issues that comes to sort of having inaccessible websites. And we're definitely keen on spreading awareness about this and also making sure that people can help rectify these issues.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea to bring it into the design side, because I know we at my company, we relaunched their website last year, and within like 4 months, we pretty much had to go through and like change a bunch of it because it was inaccessible. And like underlined links, for instance, that was an easy one that we had to put in, but it did change our design quite a bit. So even though we kind of designed it to look a certain way, as soon as you add those underlines, it can make it look quite busy. So as long as you're aware that you should be doing that when you're designing, they can solve some headaches before you run into them later.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that maybe some reworking had to be done on your end. But yeah, I think, you know, like for you, you know, that maybe there was a wake up call for a number of organizations kind of happening right now. It's happening in all over kind of different creative spaces in Hollywood too. So sort of people realizing, you know, actually, you know, this is a really big priority. And yeah, what we're trying to do as a company is not kind of name and shame people, but just instead try and change the culture, right? It's like, you know, instead of this being an add-on to design or something that we do after, it's actually core to design. It's making sure things that are accessible and usable by default. So yeah, really glad to hear that you're joining us on that journey.
And I mean, I know this is like when we talk about accessibility too, in my mind, I think you should think of it as making it more accessible for everyone, not just people with disabilities. So yeah, if your buttons are too small on mobile, like you need to make
100%. I mean, well,
it bigger.
we also sometimes say, like, it's not just people with disabilities. It very well, as you said, could be everyone. The category of folks I particularly call out, or the demographic rather, is often seniors, right? Many seniors may not technically be blind or deaf or even, you know, necessarily hard of hearing, but they might just have lower vision or reduced hearing or even sometimes declining cognitive abilities, which can also shape the way that you interact with a website. I even know on my end, like, a lot of it, sort of the adjustments that you can make now to your computer or your device, for example, you know, adaptive brightness or, you know, being able to change text size. I even know on my Mac, I actually enable increased contrast and increased sort of focus. Like, that just makes it easier to use and kind of reduces eye strain in our, you know, our very computer and electronic centric generation. So it really has driven a lot of improvements for the bulk of society.
And what departments do you typically work with and find are basically in charge of dealing with digital accessibility, at least?
Yeah, so I mean, many are, I know we're on a marketing podcast, we're sort of talking in the context of marketing. I would say rarely is it under marketing. Maybe for the management of an external website in terms of some of the implementation, but in terms of where it's centered, we often find that, you know, maybe a larger organization, an enterprise organization, a government, they may actually have a dedicated accessibility team or an accessibility manager. So that might be, you know, for example, Fable, who we work with. Although increasingly we find interest is coming from UX and design teams fundamentally. They're committed to accessibility, to actually improve user experiences, to research them and design for them at the start. Sometimes also it's actually on the development team or the QA team who are, you know, want to make sure that they, you know, they can test their products to validate them and make sure they're ultimately accessible. So the answer is ultimately it's under maybe a few different departments. Increasingly, I would say we kind of see it under UX and design, or at least maybe there's an accessibility function. And residing there or sort of working in conjunction there.
Yeah, I'm surprised you say that because, like, for me, it basically falls under my position as digital marketer because
Yeah.
I'm kind of I own the website. That's kind of, you know, where my ownership is. So, I mean, I'm the one who works with the developers, but it kind of has to come from me, direction-wise. So, it's interesting you say that, and I guess for larger companies, it would make sense.
Yeah, and you know, for governments too, it's increasingly a priority as well. And you know, a lot of organizations, nonprofit organizations, it's sort of becoming essential that this is a part of the requirements. And I think for design teams, you know, it's a bit of a change in the culture of design and folks wanting to have this present throughout the app, the external websites, pretty much everything that you would interact with as a user and make sure it's fully accessible, right?
And I mean, as you talk about, like, it's increasing, obviously, I think, like, in Ontario, we've got the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act, which I find such a struggle to say and kind of ironic that way, came into effect. We're recording this December, but we're going to put it out in January. And on January 1st, basically every website needs to be accessible. But I haven't seen too much chatter about it either. I'm just like, can you tell our audience kind of what it is and why they should be aware of it?
Yeah, so the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act, and in Michael's just reference, you just call it the AODA in the future. Just go for the
Yeah, I will in the future. You got to spell it out the first time, right?
acronym. Always. 100%. So there's so many acronyms sort of in this space, but the AODA, so that's Ontario based. So at this point, Michael, you mentioned that date, January 1st, 2021. So all organizations with 50 plus employees. That's including private organizations, and that already included governments and NGOs. Your internet websites and web content, and I believe that includes a number of apps as well. That has to conform with what's sort of called, I would say, kind of maybe the basics of the WCAG, the 2.0 level AA. And to make that very clear, that's all published online. There's a few different basic criteria of what that actually encompasses. I'm not going to list all those out right now, but maybe I'll just highlight a few principles behind that. So there's another handy acronym which that those set of guidelines use. It's POUR, which is POUR. So things need to be perceivable on your website. That's information, user interface components. They have to be presentable to users in ways that they can actually perceive. They have to be operable. So UI components and navigation components, they need to actually be able to be operated by a user. They need to be understandable, and people be able to perceive them, to be able to use them, and understand what they actually are doing. And ultimately, content needs to be robust. It needs to be robust enough that it can be interpreted reliably by a wide variety of users, different browsers, and different assistive technologies, for example, screen readers. My advice is, you know, if that makes sense from a principal perspective, is just go ahead and take a look online and figure out more about what you need to do for that that AA level, and make sure that you can get your website there. There are, again, a number of basic things that you can do which will make a big dent in it, I would imagine, for both websites. And you know, we'll be publishing some more content on this in the very near future if you are going to need some more guidelines there. But that's sort of one step. And the second thing I would mention, actually, there's another deadline upcoming, but it's at 6 months from now, end of June 2021, is organizations in Ontario also actually need to complete a basic compliance report in terms of if they are actually complying to these guidelines and to accessibility practices. So yeah, two deadlines coming up in 2021.
Do you know what they will need to prove that they're following the guidelines, or is that going to get too technical for our podcast?
I don't know exactly, but it's very accessible actually on the province of Ontario's website. So just look it up as AODA compliance, and you can find sort of all the details there.
I mean, obviously, having the AODA out there is a big point for convincing any kind of stakeholders to make a website more accessible. But like, is there any talking points that you could help marketers to kind of make the case even stronger?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a marketer. I speak your language. Conversion rates. you know, so many of our largest customers at Fable are e-commerce organizations. That can include Walmart and Shopify. A lot of these are amazing companies, and they, you know, are making it possible for many different retailers to sell their products, and also for a lot of small businesses to sell their products. And by doing that, they want to make sure that everything is as accessible as possible, as usable as possible. These companies are already doing a great job. We're just helping them do even better. But what does that ultimately mean? I mean, that means as a marketer, as someone who's trying to, you know, increase commerce, you can actually improve conversion rates. And not just for people with disabilities, but for everyone. Consider, again, that many seniors may not be technically deaf or blind, but they might have other challenges. And a number of people across different markets, you know, imagine folks, maybe your language is in English, or maybe someone is English as a second language. Even just having a more accessible website could also improve anybody's ability to use it. So particularly in this, you know, time where people are more remote than ever or are accessing your website, it's so critical to ensure that people can operate it to the best of their ability, and that can ultimately have a real impact on some of your bottom lines to actually make things, you know, again, as you mentioned, might just be making those buttons a little bit bigger, a little more visible. And as a marketer, as a growth person, you can test this. You can run some growth experiments. I would make a strong bet that the more accessible you make it, and we've got a good amount of data to prove it, that's going to make a big difference on your rates there.
There you go. I mean, you're also opening up the audience too, right? So more eyeballs, the better, right?
Exactly. I mean, just consider the population of people with disabilities, right? It's you know, the UN estimates that this could be like more than 1 billion people worldwide. That's like 15% of the global population. I think in the US alone, there's like, I think 10 million folks who use screen readers. That's a good chunk of folks. And often these folks have a good amount of technical literacy just by needing to use that assistive technology. They're wanting to use products. And so this is actually could be a competitive advantage for a lot of companies. Is if you have accessibility on your website and other people in your space don't, there you go. That's a whole audience that may be untapped for you. And I think too, like if you publish a lot of content, there are some really simple things that are great to start with. If you know basic HTML or you use WordPress, you can install a plugin like WordPress Accessibility that automatically adds skip links to make sure that people can easily navigate to the main areas of content. It'll also add an outline to the focus states of elements. So imagine like you use a keyboard to navigate. If you're tabbing around a website, that'll focus on different elements to make sure that you know that's highlighted. Another thing I'd quickly recommend, I actually just discovered this recently, but it's using Rev.com. So Rev's got a great plugin to YouTube or Vimeo. So let's say you've already got a bunch of videos uploaded there and you want to caption them to make sure that people who are deaf or hard of hearing can have those captions. Rev can do that pretty much automatically. It'll pull in your videos and then you can just, you know, for a very low rate, caption them all. And suddenly you've got closed captions, and that's another big step on accessibility for all your video library.
Does it also, can you download those captions?
Yeah, you can download them as well.
And now you've got a blog.
Exactly. It's transcribed. That's a whole nother content piece. So really, really, you know, accessibility, both from a design perspective, conversion rates, and even further, like in the content realm, there's some real benefits. And I'm already seeing them personally as a marketer. I'm finding that this has made a difference on my kind of level of quality of stuff I'm putting out, as well as actually quantity. So it's cool.
So I know a lot of my audience listening, they publish a lot of content and aren't necessarily developers. What are some things that we can do that you wouldn't necessarily need a developer for?
I think some of the things I mentioned, honestly, could be some of the best ones. Like, those are things that, again, if you have a basic level of HTML or WordPress, you're doing this alt text piece, installing some quick plugins, getting some transcriptions, those are really easy ones to check off. Some things that, you know, you might need a developer for would be more like, you know, redeveloping parts of your product or things like that. Figuring out buttons. Like, one thing that I did do recently, though, that actually helped improve accessibility, which requires like a little bit of HTML and CSS, but honestly not a lot, was going back through all of the call to action buttons on our website. And instead of using some of the built-in CTA ones from our CRM, was actually just developing them like in a very small way, and just be like, this is the button, this is the CSS styling, and then here is the area label. So making sure that our buttons are just like, that those get properly read out, and that nobody gets confused by them. So there are some really small things to do. And again, this makes it easier for folks to use your website and hopefully to move forward with it. Like, one of the stats I would share, and this is pretty relevant to e-commerce or, you know, maybe folks that have kind of a small business, but I think it's 70%+ of shoppers with a disability will leave a website that's too difficult to use. And even more of them might pay more for the same item if a competitor's website is more accessible. So there really is a variance here, and some of these small small items can really make a difference. If at the base level, making sure it's accessible, if not, you know, the most amazing user experience. And I really encourage folks to start with some of the low-hanging fruit.
I might just pick your brain a little bit more on some of the things that we can do, like alt tags, for instance. You know, I kind of, a few years ago, alt tag to me was somewhere you could put more keywords. What should you be putting in an alt tag?
So I've actually been learning how to do this better and better. In general, you want to keep them concise and descriptive enough. So for example, I was doing one this morning for some of our social media, and I, you know, there was a person there. It was an image of a person in a wheelchair who was using a computer. And you don't need to go all the way out and go storybook level descriptive. Like, you don't need to say that they were wearing a blue shirt and their feet were planted on the ground and this was the model of the computer. From what I've heard, you really don't, and you want to keep it to be concise and useful enough that someone can understand, and then they could proceed with the text content and, you know, kind of get in. And deeper into, you know, the stuff that really matters. Let's say that's part of an article or a social media post. Unless, you know, the focus of the content is ultimately that image, then you want to get maybe a bit more descriptive. And, you know, remember, a picture is worth 1,000 words. You don't necessarily need to go 1,000 words deep, but, you know, at least explain, you know, what's going on and some of the main elements there. Where you don't want to use alt text, and sometimes WordPress actually has a check mark for this, depending on what version you're on, but you may not actually want to use alt text if something is purely decorative. So for example, it could be a logo, or it could be like a little visual accent, maybe from a design perspective. If this doesn't really add anything or doesn't tell anything to the user, then just mark it as decorative or don't use any alt text if you don't want that to get read. Ultimately, I would just try and, you know, if you don't immediately have access and you don't have the ability to test your product or test your website with people with disabilities, it's just do your best to be empathetic and place yourself in someone else's shoes and say, you know, imagine this user was blind. You know, what would it be like to just perceive this page without images? Would they be able to understand it? And so insert those, keep them in mind as placeholders, and you know, be descriptive where it makes sense, but otherwise just be clear, making sure it's understandable. And that's a better guideline for sort of low-hanging fruit on alt text.
And what about like links within an article? How should they be input?
So you want to make sure your links are clear. Like, you don't want to have ambiguous links. So typically what I try and do is I try and include like a few words, like let's say 5 words, like this is a website which, you know, would link you to article about X. And I want to make sure that article about X, like that's all highlighted, not just like find this link here, right? Like, because you don't really ultimately know where that's headed. Sometimes I also include the source as well so that people know where it's going. And that might just help, you know, people really understand like where you might be taking them to. You want to build links so that something is very usable and very clear about what it's linking to and where it's going.
So like, I know anchor links are pretty popular with like SEO. Is that actually a good practice though? Like if you're just linking words that you want to rank for, but don't necessarily describe where you're going, would that be a bit of a no-no?
Yeah, I mean, I would hesitate to say like strike a balance there. Like normally I would say like, you know, go very hard on an SEO, and I think that's my traditional marketing discipline. But increasingly what I'm trying to do is make sure that the links in a blog post are accessible and usable and clear. And I'm thinking of SEO more as the afterthought. And, you know, you don't necessarily always have to have SEO, you know, it doesn't always have to be linked to everything. What I understand about SEO is it's more important to have backlinks on other websites that are ultimately linking to you. But your keyword density, like you don't need to be linking that keyword every single time, as long as that keyword is in the copy of the text. So I would go more focusing on your SEO in the context of keywords in the text, not necessarily being anchor links. And that will, I think, improve the overall clarity without reducing the SEO of your blog articles.
That's good. Do you guys have any resources on your recommendations on how to do links and that sort of thing?
I think we may broadly, I will double check for you and I'll get back to you and link there. But I know I actually also posted something on our social media channels yesterday, which was how to put accessibility at the forefront of marketing. And it was a Forbes article. So it was actually had a few different recommendations there on call to actions, fonts, representing text, landing pages. So I'll forward that to you after, and that might be helpful. Definitely like, you know, just make it easy for folks to navigate. That's one of the number one things I can say with whatever links you're using. Like, I also, from my understanding, know that Google actually recently changed, I believe it was the end of 2019, their algorithm. So it's now actually using something called BERT, which is a language model called Bidirectional Encoder Representations from Transformers. So they've actually changed their SEO and search algorithms to be more focused on natural language. And so by focusing on clarity, focusing on accessibility, you might actually be more serving into the latest nature of their algorithms as they're continuing to fine tune that, rather than just stacking keywords over and over, right? I don't know the full details and specifics of that, but at a high level, that's more of my recent understanding about how that algorithm, the latest one, continues to focus on that instead. So that's one of my suggestions there. And you can actually read more about that directly on Google's blog and see how some of those search engine pieces come up, because PageRank is not the basis anymore.
Yeah, and then my general understanding is that Google typically likes accessibility, so, and I think they're going to lean more into that. So you'll see probably better results down the track the more algorithm updates they do.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, a lot of this is about improving a website in general. So one of our closest partners, Siteimprove, we actually just recently did a webinar with them recently. You know, they have an automated tool that helps you do a lot of, you know, good things on accessibility. And a lot of that is just making websites better. And funny enough, there's a very strong correlation with accessibility and actually improving your overall performance website experience. So you know, highly recommend checking out some tools like that. You know, in our case of Fable, like we you know, take it even a step into how can people with disabilities actually, you know, use a website, and we'll actually have folks go in and test those. People can get that on demand. And so, you know, we really care about this. And we really want people to not just make their websites accessible, but ultimately very, very usable. And I think every marketer has a vested interest in that, right? It is making sure that people have a great experience and keep coming back, that it's very sticky. And so, yeah, I mean, it really is kind of a multi-stage commitment. It's not as overwhelming as it may seem. There are some very low-hanging fruit to start with. And you know, if anybody ever has any questions, I especially on the marketing end, and feel free to contact me directly, because I definitely am continuing to build up my knowledge on this too, right? I don't have it all figured out, and I think it's something that I really hope the whole community jumps into.
For sure. And I mean, we kind of spoke about the AODA. Is there any other kind of laws kicking in place that anyone outside of Ontario should be aware of?
Yeah, I mean, the main thing to keep in mind is for Canadians, there's actually a Canadian Accessibility Act coming out. I don't know what the exact term is, but it's specifically for online work. I believe that may tie in with some of the privacy legislation coming out. I'll have to double check on that, but I believe that that's coming out with maybe similar guidelines as Ontario has. The other one, of course, to keep in mind, it's, I think it's actually today or very recently, was the 30-year anniversary of the ADA, which is the Americans with Disabilities Act. And so that has a number of different pieces that, you know, definitely businesses based in the U.S. in particular should keep in mind, or anybody who wants to do business in the U.S. There's actually been some major fines that have been handed out in class action lawsuits in the last couple of years. So definitely some teeth to that, and more important than ever. And of course, you know, as you do this whole thinking about compliance, definitely make sure you're looking in GDPR and things like that as well. You know, a lot of this is I think that folks with disabilities in particular have maybe more information or kind of more things that they need to think about in terms of privacy and things like that. It's actually something that our community manager, Sam, has recently commented on, is sort of the nature of modern websites and analytics and AI as it has to do with privacy. And so, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that we can do to educate ourselves further, going beyond just, you know, standard conversions and kind of standard metrics. And I'm really, you know, committed to this journey. And so I definitely recommend folks take a look at these laws and, you know, for one, make sure you're not liable for anything, but for two, you know, really, really commit to making things more usable as well.
Yeah. And I don't mean to make this all about like do it because it's legal, obviously.
Totally.
It's a bit on the mind with AODA kind of kicking in. But as I said, I think and as you have said, it's an opportunity to increase your audience, increase conversions. And I think that point of view is interesting. So I really appreciate you kind of taking us through it and giving some tips there. And hopefully we'll get that Forbes article and put that in the links. But if anyone wants to contact you or work with Fable, where should they go?
Yeah, you can just shoot me a note at jackson@makeitfable.com. Or if you just want to reach us in general, it's info@makeitfable.com. I'm also on Twitter @Jackson. Yeah, feel free to check us out. Also, like, if you do want to run it quick, as I mentioned, that it's a free no cash tool. You don't even have to enter in your information, but that's our Oz tool, makeitfable.com/AUS. So you can just quickly check your website's usability for people with disabilities or people who use assistive technology. Yeah, highly recommend it. And, you know, if you're interested to learn more, we're going to be posting some content about this on our blog more and more as well. So feel free to check it out.
And while I got you here, let's what's your podcast all about?
Yeah, so I have my free time. I run a podcast called Ask AI. I've been running for a few years. First couple of years were volunteer based, and now actually Microsoft actually sponsors the podcast, and as did Cinchy, another Toronto based data tech startup. So yeah, I mean, we have a great time on that podcast. I'm personally extremely interested in AI. I have been since I worked at Nudge. And, you know, we interview leaders from all over. Those are folks who work in academia, who work in policy, work in startups, big organizations. And yeah, we really want to shine a light, particularly in Canada and in the efforts in our company, in our country, to make sure that people are, you know, are aware of these developments, number one, and can learn more about them. And ultimately, it's really about making some of those very complex ideas accessible. Because I don't want that to just exist in ivory towers or silos. I really think that AI is one of the most exponential formative technologies. It's akin to sort of the electricity as I think a century level innovation. And so I really think everybody should have a vested interest in some basic knowledge in it.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get you on another podcast to dive a little deeper on that one as well.
Sounds fun. Always happy to talk.
Where should they go for that podcast, by the way?
That's just askai.org, and you can subscribe on iTunes or Spotify.
Sounds great. Well, thanks for coming on, Jackson. I know you're a bit stretched for time, so I really appreciate you taking us through this.